the Rise Up See Red podcast, all about the Arizona Cardinals and the NFL, featuring insider and outsider perspectives. Enjoy the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Now here are your hosts, Jess Root and Seth Cox.
Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome to the latest edition of the Rise Up See Red podcast. I'm your host, Jess Root, from CardsWire.com, USA Today's NFL Wire site. And joining me on a Tuesday night is Seth Cox from RevengeOfTheBirds.com, the SB Nation Arizona Cardinals site, and also one of the hosts of the original Draft Breakdown podcast. This is episode 428. We're going to try and get a second show later this week, and then we'll have to wait and see because Cardinals are in minicamp right now. This is the final week before training camp, so they'll have about 6 weeks off. And we've got a handful of storylines, Seth. And are you ready for the dead part of the offseason?
Yeah, looking super forward to it, right? Like, it's going to be that time of year where we talk about past teams and present teams and different teams, and
I'll try over the next couple of months to get some guests. Well, I've been the last 2-3 years is the preview series, and so I'll do that coming up. The preview shows over the next month, I think, leading up to camp. Maybe we can throw in another guest or something or other. We'll see, but gotta keep that content out. And like, it's that time of year when I've started the countdown. This year I did this a few years ago. Is, you know, as we hit each day, I try to cherry pick a few stats of that number. Other times I've done featured a season. A lot of years I've done either focusing on one player with a particular number or a series of players at a number. But yeah, it's, and what we're trying to, while we're trying to win a lot of traditional or more traditional news markets, sports market type things, publications are light on content, we try to continue to keep the content out there. And so we've got some stuff to talk about in this episode. Buda Baker, the latest with him. The Cardinals released a new flight plan episode. What did we take away from that? A couple of names in the free agent market. A 2-in prediction. And then we'll talk a little bit about what we're starting to see a trend, at least at two different positions. Let's go ahead and get started, Seth. Buda Baker, in training camp, as we expected he would be. He said he would be where he was, where when it was time to be there, he'd be there. We assumed that that meant training camp. He showed up for training camp. However, it appears he is holding in. That's kind of what it looks like. As Tuesday, he was not on the field with his teammates. And Jonathan Gannon recognized that. He's not particularly worried about it. It is a business-type thing. Monty Hassenfort says that there's good open communication. How much do you think this is going to affect things over the next few weeks?
I don't. I think they're trying to get stuff done. You know, we've talked about it before. His agent is notorious for this. This isn't uncommon. You know, he's... And I think you and I don't remember, did we talk about this on the air? I think we did, that, you know, God forbid anything happened to him in OTAs or anything like that. The Cardinals would not screw him. Like, no, they wouldn't. No. They wouldn't do that. But, you know, I do understand it's his agent's job and blah, 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 blah. But, you know, for the most part, I'm not surprised or worried yet. You know, until this becomes a distraction, there's really nothing to worry about, right?
Yeah, it really doesn't matter. And while it is a new defense, Gannon says Buda's played a lot of football, so it's not like he's played a lot of football, and he's played football at a high level. So he is keeping up with the classroom stuff, and he's a good enough player on the field that he should be fine by getting the reps in training camp, assuming that he doesn't hold in during training camp as well. I mean, the big picture, when it comes to minicamp, he's in the building for all the other things. The only thing he's not doing is participating in two practices. I don't know if he's not, I'm assuming they're doing a few walkthrough things, and I wonder if he's participating in that because it's a walkthrough speed. But when it comes to like full practices, that ultimately at the end, it's two practices because while you can have three practices, the Cardinals are only doing two practices for minicamp.
And so, you know, at the end of the day, him having the defensive playbook is honestly more important than him being out there to walk through things, right?
Like, right. And he's
him been... just, yeah, him just getting used to things and that type of stuff is more important.
And he's asking questions in classwork stuff. Gannon said that he was basically wearing out the film guys. So it's not like he hasn't been preparing for the season. He is just doing the business. It's the leverage play. Now, this isn't, and what's interesting about this is there aren't many people throwing a fit about this because it's Buda Baker. Remember when this was Kyler Murray a year ago? People were going bananas about it. And even he showed up to minicamp and participated, but
everybody's got their thing, man. Everybody's got their thing.
And, you know, yeah, I'm not particularly worried about Baker because he plays at a super high level. I do wonder, it makes me think some of the things that they've said is that perhaps there will be a deal done before the beginning of the season.
It seems like it's going in that direction,
which is kind of weird because, you know, maybe Austin Ford is, you know, while playing the hard line early, really does value, but makes it look like that they do value Baker moving forward. And I mean, there you can always do things a little creatively to make things. And I do know through a source that Buda really honestly what he wants. Well, he would like more money if they'd simply guaranteed his money this year. He'd be happy. And I've said something about this is that there is something to that guaranteed money. However, because of the type of player Buda is, that money's basically guaranteed anyway, because he just has to be on the roster right in week one. And if you were to suffer a terrible injury, random injured, he'd still get paid all that money. And so it is more about just the peace of mind, which is really interesting about that, because a player of his caliber who is as important in the locker room, he's not the type of guy that a team would try to wiggle out of a deal.
No, and that's the biggest thing. They're not going to screw him. They don't want to set a bad precedent. So,
you know, some of the things he said is just kind of interesting because players do have injury protection in the offseason. Say a team generally cannot waive a player who is injured. They can't just, if he's injured and they waive him, you can do that, but they have to have an injury designation to let the rest of the league know that he's hurt. And if no one claims it, and I honestly can't think of an instance in the last many seasons where there was a waived injured player that was claimed by another team. And if they don't get claimed, they revert to injured reserve, in which case, unless there was an injury settlement later, they get that full year salary, which the NFL is really good. Like, there are a lot of things about the NFL and the NFLPA and kind of how the business side of things work, but there are a number of protections for players in that sense.
Right. And, you know, it makes this whole situation kind of feel silly.
Yeah. But you know,
we understand it, but like, it's just the whole situation's silly.
Yeah. But give the man his money. Hopefully he can keep playing at a high level. Coming up next on the Rise Up Sierra podcast, Mr. of Cardinals Talk and Loom. Let's move on and talk about some of the stuff we saw on the new edition of Cardinals Flight Plan. That's coming up next on Rise Up Sierra. Back on the Rise Up Sierra podcast, Mr. of Cardinals Talk of the Web. The Cardinals released another episode of Cardinals Flight Plan, and this gave us some insight into draft night, some of the deals that were made. Paris Johnson, you know, content with him behind the scenes, his mother, the scene when he is welcomed to the team and the facility, and, you know, in particular, a long featured interview with receiver Michael Wilson. And if there's one thing I can take away, is that early on in the offseason, it would appear the Cardinals have really high hopes for Wilson, for a number of reasons. Because of the position, he himself said he thought he was, that when the Cardinals drafted and promised them that they got the steal of the draft. But I always find it interesting, in particular, how the social media team, their media productions, just anything that they try to promote, and who are the young players that they promote. Notice that they didn't do anything really. They got a clip of BJ Ojulari. Now, granted, he's unsigned. They didn't have anything about Garrett Williams. They didn't have anything about John Gaines. They didn't do anything about Dante Still. But the two rookies that they prominently featured were Paris Johnson and Michael Wilson. And I find that fascinating.
Yeah, it's clear that there's a lot to like about Wilson, the person, and be excited about Wilson, the player. We talked about him before the draft, and just, you know, he was a standout at the
Senior Bowl.
The Senior Bowl. Thank you. I'm just escaping my name here.
Which he was worried he wasn't going to get an invite, and so he was worried that if he didn't get that invite, he might not get drafted, and he didn't want to go back to Stanford for a sixth year for college football.
Right, exactly. And so it's just one of those situations that you look at, and he has kind of he's just kind of creating the buzz about him the right way. And I mean, the biggest thing for him is obviously the injury situation. He's got to
His bones need to stay together, because he hasn't had soft tissue stuff. But let's be honest, if your bones consistently are an issue, that's also an issue. I mean, it's not necessarily a football thing. It's not that you're not taking care of yourself, but when you have fractures multiple times, you start worrying about just other issues when it comes to football, because football is a violent sport. I mean, broken collarbone, two Jones injuries in his feet. It's interesting because he's drafted. Let's think back a few years and remember when the Cardinals drafted Chad Williams, right? I think it was right around the same area in the third round where Wilson was picked. And there was a little bit of other, just tiny bits of buzz. That's because of Bruce Arians' success with receivers. But I don't know how much is fan push, media to kind of picking him up because DeAndre Hopkins just got released. It's very interesting to see how he's featured, and it looks like it. You know, remember when Rondell Moore, that rookie year, they were raving about him. He's getting that same sort of treatment. Now, Rondell made plays and had ups and downs his rookie season, but Wilson, he's gotten a lot of commentary about him, whether it's good, whether it's bad. I remember Colt McCoy saying something about, like, Wilson, it's like, what are you doing? But, you know, he understood because he's a rookie, but apparently, and what we heard recently is that he's light years ahead of where he is in rookie minicamp, which is, I mean, probably a good thing, because I think pretty much everyone in rookie minicamp is usually a little bit lost.
Right, and I mean, it's cliche, and so I don't want to say it, but he obviously, you know, went to Stanford, so he's probably pretty smart, right? And he's just a guy that had some unfortunate circumstances around him the last couple of years at Stanford. So you look at it and you figure out where, you know, what he can do and what he can be. And that's, I mean, that's the exciting part. And then from there, you just kind of figure it all out. Hopefully it works out for him. Hopefully, you know, he turns into a good player for the Cardinals, and it's a win. But it is interesting that they are featuring him as much as they have been, right?
Right. And it was obviously Paris Johnson. That makes sense. That makes a lot of sense. And just a little snippet with Ojulari.
I was going to say, do you think the Ojulari thing is just simply because he's not?
I think so. I think so. It's part of it. He's not signed. I mean, but we did at least of the, when they did the food bank, he was the one player that they really kind of featured. They didn't, haven't talked about either of the cornerbacks. I mean, other than Kittrell was working the camera at the Diamondbacks game. But yeah, really, the two rookies that have gotten in like any sort of airplay at all in terms of hype, it's Johnson and Wilson. And I get Johnson, makes sense. And although is it officially time to put Kelvin Beachum on notice?
Right, exactly. How much they love Paris, right?
Well, and Gannon said that he's been playing it. It's like, Gannon tries not to give anything away, but he did say that, and from the reps we've seen, the little bit that we've seen from OTAs, from rookie minicamp, he was getting reps at right tackle. And that's continued to be the case. And while they talk about his versatility, Gannon made sure to say that he has the traits that you want in a tackle to play outside and that he's been practicing outside. You know, DJ's going to be the starting left tackle. And it looks like Paris is going to be given every opportunity to start a right tackle, which, you know, this is, isn't this exactly what Kyler wanted? There was the quiet report that this was one of those less reputable reports that someone said to someone that Kyler had told Paris specifically, not just they wanted to draft, but he says, I want you to be right tackle. Now we do know that there perhaps is a little bit of I don't know if you want to call it petty, but maybe a little bit of distrust with Kelvin Beachum because of what Beachum said about Kyler. And neither one of us thinks that what Beachum said was offensive in any way, but it's,
yeah, it wasn't out of pocket, but it also
could be taken that the way it played out in national media, what Beachum said. And honestly, I'm glad Beachum said it. What he said wasn't wrong, but right. I can see why Kyler might not be particularly thrilled about it. I know Hollywood was very unhappy with it, but we get the feeling that Paris is really right there. And for all you Kyler people about who he is as a teammate, and I pointed this out on in one of the articles I wrote, it's like if you watch the flight plan episode and you see the clip when Johnson and his mother first arrived to Tempe to get to the Cardinals facility, notice it was Michael Bidwell greeting him, it was General Manager Monty Austin meeting and greeting him, Jonathan Gannon, and it was Kyler Murray. And that gauntlet of employees as he walked into the facility for the first time after he was drafted, there was only one teammate, and that was Kyler. Now, there's no reason why the other players would need to be there, but let's remind everyone of the narrative that's been painted about Kyler of not being a leader, not being a good teammate. And guess what? He's there for the team's first-round pick. Now, granted, he was the player that Kyler wanted, but, you know, this is the type of thing that people need to recognize is happening.
Right, exactly. So it'll be interesting to see how this all works itself out, but you're seeing how it's starting to unfold, right?
Yeah, it was fun to see in the draft room the Monty working the phones and how he was trying to set things up. They made a call to Seattle. They were willing, after they went down to number 12, they wanted to move up. They basically, when they moved down, they knew they wanted to move back up. And they tried Seattle, but Seattle wanted the pick. Then and obviously we know that they end up with Detroit, but they also had an offer on the table from the Raiders, and they had the Falcons in their pocket as well. But it was very interesting to see how that went down.
I was going to say the rumor was that the Raiders would have taken.
Yeah, that the Raiders were going to take, like, had they not had the Cardinals not traded up to six, or had the Raiders not traded the pick to the Cardinals, like, if they just stayed put, Paris was the guy that they're going to take.
Which, you know, it's funny to see how Raiders fans react, because they're not exactly happy with Tyree Wilson. They're not mad, but they're like, kind of like, oh, well, if you wanted this guy, why not go get him type of situation, right? And that's something that we've said as Cardinals fans quite a bit, right? Like, why wait back? Why, you know, blah, blah, blah. And it's nice to not be that team this year.
Right. Well, it was fantastic to see, because, you know, they wanted to move back, but then they wanted Paris. And so that was, you know, it was fun to see, and it was fun to see Gannon, like, sitting there in the draft room, just absolutely awed by what Austin Fort and his guys were doing. He's like, whoa.
Right. Right. Cause you do wonder how much, like, Gannon's been in the room before for that situation.
I'm pretty sure it's the first time, because I'm almost certain that, like, at Cardinals wise, it's just the head coach that's in the draft room with the guys. Because remember, like, even last year or the year before, that Keim was on the, like, VJ wasn't there. Keim called him and said, hey, we just drafted your starting Mike.
Right, exactly.
And so, no, that was probably Gannon's first experience in the war room there. And so to see all the things happening was probably...
And it was one of the more exciting experiences, I'm
Oh,
sure.
Yeah. This was, of all the drafts that I've covered since, you know, I wrote about the 2011 draft, and then was actively doing things probably from 2012 on, but it was 2015 on that I started going to the facility or being part of the actual media credential group for draft night. This was the most exciting that there ever, because usually, you know, there was 2019, which was the Kyler one where, you know, that was a given. And then we basically sat for the rest of the first round. But this one was legitimate exciting.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. Anything else from the flight plan episode that stood out?
No, I just thought it was cool to see how it all kind of went down and that they kind of had multiple things ongoing, and to see how they went about their business, right?
Yeah, it was fun to see. It was nice to hear the emotional part from Johnson, kind of the full circle type thing. You know, his mom, who remembers being in Tempe before, more than 20 years before, when Paris's dad was drafted by the Cardinals. That had to be something special. But coming next on the Rise of Syrup podcast, Mr. Cardinals Talk on the Web, we've got a couple of big names. Should the Cardinals, you know, kick the tires around on these? That's coming next on Rise of Syrup. We're back on the Rise of Syrup podcast, Mr. Cardinals Talk on the Web. A couple of Minnesota Vikings. Well, one, a former Minnesota Vikings player in Dalvin Cook was released by the team. And the Vikings are taking trade calls about Danielle Hunter, a player that there was, I don't know if the Cardinals had interest, but there was certainly interest last offseason about whether the Cardinals should try and acquire him. Now, of course, this year, there is the added connection that both Dalvin Cook and Danielle Hunter have connections to the Cardinals coaching staff, as Drew Petzing was on the Minnesota Vikings staff when Cook first came into the league. And then obviously Jonathan Gannon and Nick Rallis were on the staff in Minnesota during Hunter's tenure there in Minnesota. We know that Dalvin Cook is looking for a big contract. That obviously the Cardinals aren't looking to do that. But would it be worth it? We know that they want to run the ball. Wouldn't a Dalvin Cook type player to go along with James Conner kind of fit offensively what they might want to be doing if you're looking at, you know, Titans, Browns, those connections with Austin Ford, who was to Tennessee, Petzing, who was in Cleveland last year, where they have the duo of Chubb, Nick Chubb, and Kareem Hunt. Aside from the price, wouldn't it make sense to kind of go after that sort of caliber player for the Cardinals with what they want to do offensively?
Yeah, I think the sticking point, like you said, I mean, obviously you'd love to be able to say, you know, aside from the price, but I think that is the sticking point, right? It's the fact that they are really trying, and again, when we say this, it's a reality. It's not, I don't want people to think that we're just going to keep taking pot shots at the old regime, but this is a reality. They're trying to undo the mess that was the salary cap situation left behind. And so I think what you're seeing is the sort of like how to differentiate that between, like, this is what is good for the team and this is what is good for the organization and the future of the organization. Like, Dalvin Cook takes you from a 4 or 5 win team to a 6 win team, maybe 7 if everybody stays healthy, right? But I don't think that hit what he's looking for in terms of salary justifies that, because he's probably not coming to Arizona for a 1 year, you know, low cost deal, right?
Right.
Now, if he was, that's a whole different subject. But, like, you're probably going to have to give him, like, a if you're Arizona, like a 2-year, you know.
Well, 15, 18 million. Conner's deal, Cook's going to want more money than that.
Right. Well, and this is the thing. And you know, we're seeing it play out in Buffalo with Stephon Diggs. We're seeing it. We've seen it play out here in Arizona a number of times. The reality of the NFL is there are very few people that will bite the bullet financially. And what I mean by that is J.J. Watt came here because the Cardinals were a decent team. They weren't good, remember, when he signed. They were a decent team, and they offered him more money than anybody else. Like, let's not sugarcoat the situation. You know, they didn't offer him the best opportunity to win. They offered him the best opportunity to make the most money and continue to play at a decently high level. You know, and then you look at, you know, you look at Fitz the last several years. You know, there were years when you and I were openly saying, like, why? I mean, I get what he's done and meant for the franchise, but why are you paying a guy, you know, $12 million a year? And now, you know, hindsight, $12 million a year now is much less than $12 million a year was in 2017 or 2018. But that was kind of, you know, what was happening. And so it's the same thing with Cook. Like, if you're able to get him and he's going to come in on a 1 year, $4.5 million deal, absolutely do it all day. Like, this isn't, if that's an option and you don't do it, then obviously you're looking at a team that's actively trying not to win. Right.
Yeah.
But I don't, like we said, I'm not sure that's an option.
He's the caliber of player you would like to add to the team, but not this year, right?
Right.
It's the timing is wrong. It's not like you don't want to add talented players, but look at what they've done with the roster. They're going young. They're definitely going young, and they're strategically doing it. I think they. I'm gonna. I will once again say I do not think that they're tanking. I don't think that they're trying to lose games.
I just think they're trying
to build the team
the
young.
Right way.
Right.
They're not trying to continue to stack veteran talent that costs a lot of money. What they're trying to do right now is actively change how their roster is structured and built moving forward.
Absolutely. And Cook, if he were available next offseason, when the Cardinals, like, it makes sense to, okay, they've got $26+ million in cap space. I mean, why eat that up when you can roll it over next year and get a Cook caliber player next year, as you'll be in a position to move on from James Conner potentially, and a number of things. Now, Danielle Hunter's interesting because, you know, he doesn't cost a lot this year. Like, his salary's low. Now, granted, if anyone who's trading for him is probably giving him an extension. That's kind of part of the deal. But that's
a different situation because you're talking about a premium position.
Right.
Like Dalvin Cook is a player you sign when you're like, hey, we're close. You know, a Dalvin Cook could tip us over the edge. Whereas a Danielle Hunter is a guy that you're like, hey, we can build around this guy for the next 3 or 4 years. Now,
look at the outside linebacker group that we have. There's no experience or proven anything. Like, your most experienced guy is Dennis Gardeck, and he had the fluky 1 year. He's a special team stud. This is what your outside, the edge rusher group looks like. You've got rookie B.J. Ojulari. You've got Myjai Sanders and Cam Thomas, both who are second-year players. You've got Victor Dimakeji. That's basically it. So
right. the question you have to ask and answer on Hunter is he in your 3-year plan? Like, is he a guy that you trade for, like you said? So you give up a third round pick. You got a bunch of those next year, right? You give up a third round pick, you extend him for 4 years, you know, $90-80 million. I don't know what the going rate is for a pass rusher right now. But that's what you have to look at. And then, you know, obviously after 3 years, you can move on. That's typically how they structure things. So is he a guy that's in that year 2 and 3 plan? And so that's what the question is, you know, and from the outside, you and I not covering Hunter, a guy that has, you know, been really good over his career. He had, you know, he had 10.5 sacks last year. He came off the injury in 21 to respond with 10.5 sacks after posting back-to-back 14.5 sack years, you know, in 19 and 18. So he missed 2020, was injured again in 2021. So these are the questions you have to ask. Are you willing to give up a third round pick for him? Two, are you willing to pay him, you know, $22 million a year? And three, knowing that he'll be 29 this year, is that a guy in your plan? And those are the questions that you and I can't answer, but you and I can say,
he, of all the guys out there, he makes the most sense to go out.
He fits what they need over the next 2 years for sure, 3 years. Yeah, for
absolutely.
Sure.
So I wouldn't feel bad at all. I wouldn't criticize a move to go after Hunter, especially since, you know, we've got young guys, Ojulari, Cam Thomas, Sanders. They're gonna all have significant opportunities to play, and Cam Thomas, some of the small playing time analytics suggest that he could be good, but
you know Danielle Hunter is
good. Yes, you know that Danielle Hunter is going to come on. He's going to make things good, and he's going to make that defense better. A unit that, especially early on in the year, while Kyler is out, you need that. Like, and the defense, that's going to be what's hard, because they have what we perceive to be an under-talented defensive unit overall, right? And they're going to be without the starting quarterback. So unless they gel very quickly and are very disciplined within the scheme, it could be ugly early. But getting a guy like Hunter immediately kind of changes things, because you have a premier pass rusher that really affects what the rest of your defense you can do. Like, look at San Francisco. Like, basically all of their pass rushing came from Nick Bosa, but look what his impact does to the rest of every other level of the defense.
Right. And, you know, it's something we talked about. Pass rush is the biggest impact of defense in the against, you know, NFL offenses at this point. So how do you address that, and what's the easiest is obviously the wrong word, but, you know, what's the easiest way to grow that? And like you said, adding Hunter would do that immediately.
Coming up next on the Rise Up C-Rip podcast, Mr. Cardinals talk. And this topic is, one NFL guy thinks the Cardinals are only going to win 2 games. Do we believe that? That's coming up next on Rise Up C-Rip. We're back on the Rise Up C-Rip podcast, Mr. Cardinals talk. On the web. Yes, we did our own game-by-game predictions in the last few shows. And we have some optimistic projections. It's the truth. Seth had 6 wins. I had 7 wins for them. Going under the assumption Kyler's going to be back in about week 6, and that he will play at a high level and the defense will come. So there's a chance. But Adam Rank did which he does every year for NFL Network, went through every team and projected their win-loss records. And the Cardinals, had them going 2-15. Picking up an improbable win against the Ravens, and then beating the Rams at home later on in the season, and that is it. I had my radio spot pretty much every week on AM 1060 with Rooster Veerstein, and he and I kind of talked through projections. He's hammering the under for the projections for the Cardinals this year. And I feel pretty strong about the over. But he said basically, and I kind of agree with this, that there's really kind of only 2 crazy predictions. One would be 0 wins. You're crazy if you think the Cardinals are going to go 0-17, because that's hard to do. And assuming Kyler Murray, you're not going to go winless with Kyler Murray there for half the season. And heck, even the Cardinals, when they were like abysmal in 2018, still managed to win 3 games. And it would be crazy to have them predict to win 9 games. But kind of anywhere in between is kind of a reasonable projection. But I don't know. I have a hard time believing that if... Now, the narrative nationwide, right, is that Kyler's going to miss most of the season. Pretty much anywhere you read nationally, the discussion point is that Kyler's going to miss at least half the season and might miss most of the season. And I don't believe that, but... If that is the belief, I can validate or justify some of these very, very terrible predictions.
I do understand it, you know, and quite frankly, it's easier to find ways to say that they're going to lose than it is to win. And so, you know, when your job is to create conversation, the last thing you're going to do is talk about the Arizona Cardinals. And that's what's so interesting. I actually was texting a buddy about this earlier today, because with this, you know, and this is something we can talk about on the next show, but with this Stephon Diggs stuff, people literally went on for months about DeAndre Hopkins and what's going to happen, blah, 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 blah. And then the Cardinals release him, get nothing for him. He still isn't signed because nobody wants to sign him, because he wants a bunch of money, but nobody's reporting that because, you know, why would they? Instead, what's happening is, you know, then Stephon Diggs, who plays for one of the best teams in the NFL, no shows to camp, similar to Budda Baker, but slightly different, and his coach and Rucker worried about it. And you know, what happens? Well, nothing, because it's not, you know, it's a good team, and you kind of just shrug your shoulders and, well, I mean, they'll figure it out because they're a good organization,
but
blah, blah, blah.
This is exactly what Diggs did in Minnesota.
Right. And so it's like, it's just, and the point of it is, it's just much easier to be like, well, it's there. There's the Cardinals.
Right.
And so when you're going through things, you're not going, man, you kind of have to worry about the Buffalo Bills because, you know, is Stephon Diggs going to play? Like, what's going on? And instead you just go, oh, you know what? The Arizona Cardinals stink, so they're only winning 2 games. And
here's the crazy thing is that Ring has the Texans winning 7 games.
I mean, it's just, it'll be interesting to see how all this turns out, you know. But like I said, right now, nothing really surprises me.
Yeah, he also has the Panthers going 9-8. He has the three of the four teams in the NFC South going 9-8. The Falcons, Panthers, and Saints go 7-8, and the Bucks go 7-10. Yeah, this is an interesting thing. But yeah, the Cardinals are the worst team in the league, followed by the Colts at 3-15 is the prediction. But you know, even on the least optimistic, the most pessimistic view that you could have on the Cardinals, I still think 3 or even 4 wins happens, because
it's really hard not to win 3 games.
And they do have a number of winnable games on their roster, on their schedule. It's a different story. This is a different story if Kyler Murray doesn't return till deep in the season, and you're got Colt McCoy or Toon or David Blau at quarterback. But Kyler, like, I still get the feeling like he's trying to get back as soon as he can. And I don't think that Gannon's going to – that I've said this before. If Kyler is healthy and he's ready to play, it's going to be a very hard sell for Kyler to tell him he can't play. And I think it would undo a lot of the goodwill that has been built up with him in the organization if they were to – like, if he's medically ready to play and he's in a good – spot in his head and they hold him out, I don't think that's going to happen.
Right, exactly. So it'll be interesting to see how this unfolds, because I just don't see a 2-win team, but I could see a 2-win team before Kyler gets back.
Yeah, that's definitely possible. Did you know, Blake mentioned me, apparently I my prediction after a nice dinner and some wine, because on Burns and Gambo, they were talking about how Gambo pointed out that no reputable reporter or anyone, and he's talking nationally, is thinking the Cardinals will win more than 5 games. And, you know, that's reasonable. I think that's reasonable. Then Burns kind of made a joke, like, you know, Jess isn't, like, it's like, oh, he's local. Like, but I know that we are probably among the more optimistic projections for what the Cardinals could do. We have a thought process behind it. But yeah, nationally, I have a hard time thinking they're going to be as bad as 2-15, because, like, and we go back to 2018 when Steve Wilks was over his head, Sam Bradford was washed. Their defense was awful, and their offense was historically terrible, and they still managed to win 3 games. And so, you know, right. I think 3-4 games, even on a bad, bad team, is still, like, the low end. And especially with a 4.5-win projection, you know, for the betting lines, I love the over. Like, I love the over. If you have it at 5.5, I'm not nearly as comfortable with the over. I mean, now it's kind of iffy, but at 4.5, I'm like, yeah, they can win 5 games. If Kyler's playing half this, they can win 5 games.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Coming up next on the Rise of the Sierra podcast, Mr. Cardinals talking about a final segment. Let's talk about one of the trends that we're seeing, at least at a couple of positions. That's coming up next, Rise Up C-Red. We're back on the Rise Up C-Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web, at cornerback and at receiver. We are seeing a clear pattern with the players that the Cardinals have added this offseason. Now, granted, we know that the receiver position, three of their core players, three of their main players that they're expected to produce, they're little. You know, you got Hollywood Brown, you've got Rondale Moore, and then Greg Dortch, if he's going to be a major part of that. And then at cornerback, but with the offseason additions that they've made at receiver and at corner, it feels like a concerted effort to add some size. Five receivers that they have added this offseason are all over 6 feet. And then they have a ton of cornerbacks on the roster right now, and half of them are over 6 feet.
Yeah, and I think that's what's going on, that we're seeing this organization kind of start to change out what they want for these positions and what they need. And it's interesting because there's always going to be that crossover, right? But there will be a lot of guys that you were excited about or hopeful about that end up kind of going somewhere else or getting lost in this shuffle, right?
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting to see how this all works out, because right now I don't think that there's any way that Brown, Moore, and Dortch are on the roster. They may not be the top three, but I think they're all three on the roster. And so you're going to see now the question becomes for how long, right?
Yeah. Yeah. If there's one player that I think might be on the outside on that storage, and I don't know, you know, he was such a playmaker last year in the limited time that he had, but let's kind of look at the cornerback position. Their smallest corner is, okay, they've got one small guy, undrafted kid out of Georgia State, Quavion White. I wouldn't project him to do much. The two guys they drafted, though, Garrett Wilson and Keitrell Clark, are both 5'10". You've got Rashad Fenton, 5'11", that they signed. Chris Boyd, 5'11", that they signed. And then you've got Antonio Hamilton's an even 6'1", but they added Kyler McMichael, Bobby Price, 6 foot, 6'4". Marco Wilson's already 6 foot. Dylan Maben, 6'1". Nate Harrison, a guy they already had on the roster, 6 foot. Yeah, but what's more notable is the receiver position, because like the five guys they added this offseason. So the undrafted kid, Danley Arias, he's 6'3". They just signed Brian Cobb, an undrafted rookie, 6'1". Zach Pascal, 6'2". Brandon Smith, 6'2", the kid who was playing in the XFL. Michael Wilson, 6'2". And then they brought back Javon Mims, who was on the practice squad last year, who was 6'4". And then they let go of Auden Tate, who was, I think, was 6'5". But now, like, the only guys under 6 feet at receiver now are the three we know, you know, Dortch, Moore, and Hollywood. And then Andre Bocellia, who, my guess, Bocellia's time, because he was a Kingsbury guy. He managed to stick around because of the Kingsbury offense, and I'm guessing he will probably not be around much longer. But the Cardinals continue to kind of remake what they're doing with different positions. And apparently, not only do you need to have physical traits, but they are also looking to add length.
Yeah, and that's what, you know, they're trying to create size. And, you know, we talk about all the time, size isn't a skill, but it is something that you can't teach. And when they have a skill level, they're able to always make up for maybe some things that they lack because of their length and size. And so this will be interesting to watch, because one of the things that we've talked about is just how this roster is going to be shaped and what they're looking for in terms of players, right? And how they want to produce their offensive and defensive depth charts. And one of the things we know is that, you know, their outside corners in Philly for Jonathan Gannon were Darius Slay and James Bradbury, both plus 6 feet, plus 200 pound guys, right? And so it shouldn't be too much of a surprise if that's what they're keying for here.
And with that, we will wrap up this edition of the Rise Up Sea Red Podcast, Mr. of Cardinals Talk. And we'll try to do another show later this week. We'll have the end of training. We'll have the end of mini camp. Whatever stuff comes up from sites all over the place. Lots of speculation and all sorts of things as we hit the dead of the offseason. That's Seth Cox. I'm Jess Rupp. This is episode 428. Thanks for listening, as always.
Thanks for listening to the latest edition of the Rise Up Sea Red Podcast. Listen to previous episodes and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Audioboom, or many other podcast platforms so shows are delivered directly to your mobile device. Please give the show a 5-star rating and always support the sponsors who support the show. We'll be back soon for the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Rise up, Red Sea, be Red Sea Red, and of course, Rise Up Sea Red.